Albayan Radio presents the following lesson live from Masjid al-Azhar, Bilmo.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillahi wa kafa wa salatu wa salamu ala al-Mustafa wa ala alihi wa sohbatihi wa man ihtada bihadihi ila yawm al-liqa wa ba'd. My beloved brethren, most respected elders, friends and colleagues, tonight's dars is on the topic of Hijrah. Hijrah is the migration of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam from Mecca to Medina. And my aim is bi-idhnillahi tabaraka wa ta'ala to go through this very significant journey and draw lessons out of it for mine in your day-to-day lives. Because in the absence of that, it's nice entertainment, but you don't walk away with valuables for you to practice on in your life. So Allah Rabbul Izzah grant me the tawfiq to do what is right in this topic, inshallah ta'ala. So just a bit of context. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam at the age of 40 is summoned to the office of prophethood. So Muhammad ibn Abdullah became Muhammad Rasulullah at the age of 40. The requirement of the office of prophethood is to declare that none is worthy of worship except for one Allah, and then that Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is his messenger. Now, it seems simple to me and you in 2020 to say la ilaha illallah. And it's only simple to me and you because of the sacrifices that they had to pay so that you could utter it with such comfort. But when they uttered it, it was the most revolutionary statement a person could utter. Do you know why? You see, the word says, La ilaha illallah. There is none worthy of worship except for one Allah. To who? To an Arab population who had 360 gods outside the Kaaba and inside the Kaaba, and to whom they were excessively devout. Notice I say a couple of things here, yeah? An Arab population. Like, these are individuals created in the furnace of the desert. They have seen difficulties of the element, harshness of climate, life and death and its challenges, and they've faced it as only as they could. Since childhood, since birth, they're given away to other tribes to rear and bring up so that they could grow up with the spirit of freedom. And do you understand? That Arab, from that time, with the sword by his side, with idols to whom he is so devout, Khalid ibn al-Walid states that my father sacrificed 100 camels for one idol. It sounds like numbers, huh? I vouch on your behalf. There is not a person here that has in one instance sacrificed 100 goats for Allah. Forget about camels in one instance. He sacrificed 100 camels out of what? Out of his devotion to his idol. So to that Arab man, in that time where there's no protection of law, and that Arab man who was so passionate about his idols, so obedient to the tradition of his forefathers, Muhammad Rasulullah comes and says, none of these are correct. أي لا معبود إلا الله. None of these have the right to be worshipped. The only one that deserves worship is the one mighty Lord above the heavens. Can you imagine what it did to that society? And times have changed, you know. I will give you an example so you understand mentality. So in Arab history, there's this man called Amr ibn Kulthum. He was what they call Sayyid al-Qawm, you know, a leader of a tribe. In that time, there was another Amr, the son of Hind, who had reached a level where the other tribes called him king. Do you understand me? So hard to do in tribal systems to accept someone as king, but means the man has reached a level of power and intellect and capability and capacity that now they refer to him as king. So this king invited Amr ibn Kulthum, the leader of a tribe, and invited his mom with him. Are you with me? So the women sat in a chamber on the other side of the tent, you know, with a partition if you like, and the men are sitting here, and this leader of the tribe is sitting in front of the king. His mom is next door. The mother of the king told the mother of this tribal leader, "Can you pass me that pot of water?" She considered it an insult to her that I am the mother of the leader of a tribe and you have just delegated a task to me. So adaban, she said, whoever owns the pot has more right to it. Like, your pot, handle it yourself, don't ask me for it. The mother of the king insisted. This lady shouted out, "Oh, the disgrace of our tribe." I want you to note the sensitivities, you see. Amr ibn Kulthum is sitting in front of the king. This king, you know, like you guys watch this Ortogul thing, they used to have a sword hanging at the back. So his sword, as a symbol of authority, was behind him, the king. So Amr jumped up, took the sword, and sheathed it, cut off the head of the king. Why? Because my mother's insulted because your mother asked her for a pot of water. Do you understand what I'm saying? To these people, Muhammad ibn Abdullah comes, Rasulullah, that forget about pots of water, all these gods are false. And not only that, لَقَدْ كُنْتُمْ أَنْتُمْ وَآبَاؤُكُمْ فِي ضَلَالٍ مُبِينٍ. You were wrong. Your forefathers were wrong. The natural reaction was that feathers are ruffled. People feel insulted. You know, you get consequences, insults, torture, imprisonment, execution, the whole shebang. Is it my voice or the mics? So long as they can hear, I'm okay.
Chair, there's a very, very, very bad announcement. There's a silver Camry that needs to be moved.
There's a silver Camry that needs to be moved.
But I say an L check because the guy's going to come upstairs soon.
Allah bless. Khair inshallah ta'ala. So, problem started for the Muslims. And you know the stories. Bilal was punished the way Bilal was punished. Sumayya was, killed the way she was killed. Ammar was burnt on coal. And the stories continued. And the early Muslim population bore the brunt of this for some 13 years. the Prophet ﷺ in particular for 13 years. So here is my first lesson for tonight. Lesson number one. Whatever task is in front of you, don't give up too quickly. Like preaching to these people was not an easy task. The Prophet himself has been strangled. The Prophet himself, alayhi afdhalu salatu wa atammu taslim, the intestines of a camel was poured on his back. They bore the difficulties. But learn from this that whatever it is in life that you tackle, whether it's a course you want to study, or a career you're pursuing, or a new business, or you know, some kind of aspiration where you want to build a masjid, or whatever it is, don't give up quickly. So for 13 long years, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and the ashab persisted in this da'wah. After 13 years, the Quraysh eventually had enough. They tried all the other stuff. Now they came up with another plan. You see, in the tribal system, if you kill someone from a tribe, whether he's right or wrong, the tribe will stand up to defend their man. Are you with me? So the system was, help your brother whether he is right or wrong. Because, you know, if you decide, khalas, it's okay, you kill that one, and then tomorrow another one, they knew the system well. So you stick by your man irrespective, tribal system. So the Prophet has a tribe, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, Banu Hashim, will not give up their man. The rest of the clans of the Quraysh recognized that if we try to hurt Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam, we will have to bear the brunt of Banu Hashim. And no one wanted to do that civil war. So after a while, they concocted this plan. That instead of one single man or one single tribe attacking Muhammad, each clan send a warrior. Each warrior strike once, stab once. So that the blood of the Rasul alayhi afdhalu salatu wa tammu taslim gets distributed amidst everyone. And then Banu Hashim cannot fight every tribe together. So we will settle and we'll pay the blood money if we need to. Devious plan. When the plan was about to be executed, when they agreed on this and they're about to action it, now Jibreel comes to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, Ya Rasul, permission has been granted for you to migrate. After 13 years. Second lesson for tonight. There comes a point in any venture, whether it's a course you're trying to study, a degree you're pursuing, business idea you have, an you know, entrepreneurial ambition you have, you try, a relationship you're pursuing, irrespective, like, do you understand me? You've tried long enough, it hasn't worked out. And obviously, you know, the halal, you know, your husband and wife type thing, like you're trying to make it work, it's not working. You've invested long enough into it. The environment has become adversely toxic for everyone. There comes a time where it becomes very clear that, listen, I have to pull the plug on this. This will not become a success. Know when to pull the plug as well. When to look for greener pastures. When to say, listen, I did my best on this business, but now it's just bleeding me to death. Khalas, I'll shut it down. This career has become too much. You know, I had full black hair a month ago and now it's gone gray. Time to move on. Do you understand? But give it a good go first. But also know when to wrap up. Because, dear ones, life is short. No point repeating the same mistake over and over and over and hoping for a different result. So it became a time where Allah Rabbul Izzah instructed the Rasul that Makkah is saturated, move on. So now the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, knowing what's happening, goes to the house of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. Live the moment. So the whole city has decided, passed the law, the bill, that this man should be executed, assassinated. All the powers of the institution, the clans, have decided that they will enact it. It's a scary time to live. Like, put yourself in a situation where forget about the whole society, just a little gang somewhere has decided to come and egg your house, you will have a sleepless night, you know. You'll put little cameras here and there trying to catch this person. That's an egg. Now that we are assassinating the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, times are tense. So the Prophet went to the house of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq radiyallahu anhu wa ardah, and he said, vacate the house, like as in send everyone out, meaning I have something to tell you, it's top secret. So Abu Bakr said, radiyallahu an, says, this is Aisha, your betrothed, and this is her sister, and this is your family. Whatever you need to say, it's safe. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that Allah has given me permission to migrate to Medina. So Abu Bakr radiyallahu anhu says, "Idhan as-suhbatu ya Rasulullah." Then companionship, O Prophet of Allah. The Prophet confirmed, our mother Aisha says, it was the first time I saw a person cry out of joy. And ayyu sharafin ba'da hadha, that I will be the exclusive companion of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam through the most blessed of journeys, and this is the hijrah. You see, there are certain journeys in Islam which are pivotal, that changed everything. The first one is Isra and Mi'raj. Notice certain similarities. I just say it as points to note. Isra and Mi'raj, it changed and brought something that is part of our everyday 5 times a day. The Salah. And in that journey, Allah chose the companion, and it is Jibreel. And Jibreel brought the ride, and it is the Buraq. And spiritually, it changed our situation till Qiyamah come. The second most significant journey is the Hijrah. Allah chose Abu Bakr as a companion, and Abu Bakr brought the rides. This journey changed Islam from a da'wah, you know, trying to survive in a hostile environment, to a system which in a few days had its own government. Very significant. But I come back to my point. So Abu Bakr as-Siddiq radiallahu anh, can I make another point here as a point to listen? This is my fourth point. The fourth point is, notice that in this time of difficulty, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam goes to Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. And Abu Bakr, we know, is the childhood friend of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. In English, they say it beautifully. They say a friend in need is a friend indeed. Like in friendship, make sure your people that your friends and family can rely on. And I understand there are those who will say, listen, I'm not good at this. In that case, let your friends and family know that, listen, Habibi, in the fun times, I'm really good, but don't come to for difficulty to me, you know, because it'll be anticlimactic. The guy comes, Habibi, I need help. You guys can't do it, you know. So therefore, a friend in need is a friend indeed. And Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu was a friend. And dear ones, this next point is when you're choosing friends, make sure you choose people that are there for you in times of difficulty. And people who bring you closer to Allah Rabbul Izzah. You understand? Friendship affects you like nothing affects you. Because normally, a normal human being comes to you with a proposal, an idea. You will take it with a pinch of salt. Your defense mechanisms are on alert. You know, the flags have been spotted. Walls are up. You're careful. With friends, it's a safe environment. You will take everything hook, line, and sinker. That's why friends affect you more than anyone else. Go find a group of people in which you have four smokers and one who's not a smoker. Let them be friends for a few months. Trust me, there will be five smokers pretty quickly. Get four basketball players and a soccer player. That soccer player will become a basketball player pretty soon. Because friends affect you. Very important. Choose friends wisely. Test your friendship. Make sure it is worth it. So Abu Bakr as-Siddiq radiallahu anhu, look at this. For the last few months, Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu has already bought two camels. And he's already been feeding the two camels the best grains in Mecca. Like the best feed in Mecca. Because he's anticipating, this can't last for long. The Rasul will have to emigrate. And when he does, alayhi afdalu salatu wa atammu taslim, everything has to be ready. So he's been preparing for a couple of months in advance. And this brings us to another point, preparation. Unfortunately, somewhere along the line, we became a people where we don't prepare for anything. You know, we want to start a business, khalas, inshallah, it will be okay. You know, we want to move to another, everything, it will be fine. Inshallah, mashallah, let's move. But our salaf were a people who used to do their due diligence. Used to study and analyze and prepare and make sure everything is ready before the day comes. So whatever it is that you do in life, do the due preparation for it. Al-akhdhu bil-asbabi sunnah. To take the means. Use the means is a sunnah. This is not piety to say, nah, I'm going to do this blindly, it will be okay. It is only your inability to do more that now you're relying that, khalas, I will do this and everything will be okay. You're taking a shortcut. So if you're doing a business, if you want to buy a business, look at their tax returns. Have a look at their feasibility studies. Do a cash flow analysis. Do a demography analysis. Does the catchment have enough population to support your business or not? Do what is on you properly and then rely on Allah Rabbul Izzah for the rest. So Abu Bakr as-Siddiq radiallahu anhu now takes the camels and gives it to Amir ibn Fuhayra or Amr ibn Fuhayra to take this to Abdullah ibn Urayqit. Abdullah ibn Urayqid is a guide. Like he knows the ways, the back ways, and the, you know, how to get from here to Medina. And notice, to have scouted and headhunted and found the guide and already built a relationship that this is what you'll need to do. Be on the ready when I call you, we have to go. All preparation. So the camels are taken to Abdullah ibn Urayqid. The Rasul alayhi afdal as-salatu wa atammu taslim goes back home. In the house of the Rasul is the belongings of the people of Mecca. Like this one has deposited some wealth with him. Ya Muhammad, you are trustworthy, so look after this gold for me. And look, I am traveling, look after this for me. Here's the shield that is very expensive. Look, do you understand? I'm not sure if it's clear for you. It's the same people that are coming to assassinate him. Like they hate him enough, dislike him enough, annoyed with him enough to have signed off on his execution, yet can't help but trust him nonetheless. They hate him enough to kill him, but trust him enough to bank with him. Next lesson. Dear ones, become people. Become people that are indispensable to your surroundings. That they might not like your beard and your prayer and this and that, but yet they say, listen, he is the most trustworthy individual you'll find. Him, nah, they don't lie. They're not like that. And his job, oh, professional. If you want it done right, go take it to that one. Build personalities that although they might dislike, but they can't help but come to. Learn that one. So, he tells Ali ibn Abi Talib, Ya Ali, take this to that person and give this one to that other person and then this one return to this one and so on and so forth. And then the day is passing. Darkness starts to come. And the Rasul notices alayhi afdalu salatu wa atammu taslim that the warriors start to trickle in. And they surround the house of the Rasul. Alayhi afdalu salatu wa atammu taslim. Now, Ali ibn Abi Talib is a relatively young man. So the Prophet tells Ali, lie down in my bed and cover yourself with my shawl. And Ali knows why the tribesmen are here. What is he asking? Like the one on this bed, they want to kill. Now you lie down here. Do you see it requires heart? It requires courage. Requires valor, bravery. And he is the... Am I giving too many lessons? Are you guys going to even remember this? I will ask at the end. وَلِمَ لَا. Now. Remember this, dear ones. All men are shackled by fear. Fear of failure, fear of disappointment, fear of the unknown, fear of ambiguity, fear of no. Do you understand? But everything that you want is on the other side of fear. Remember that. Everything, you're stuck in a job you don't like. And yet you are so talented, you're able to go and start your own business venture and probably shine globally. The thing that's holding you back is fear. So as Muslims, we are not a reckless people. Like the saddest thing would be if tomorrow there's a huge news break out, you know, that in Sydney a lot of people have resigned. It's not my, do you understand? So do your preparation, get ready, save money, see what talent, skill, do you, and there's something you want to pursue. Once everything is ready, make a 2-3 year plan and then say, khalas, now I'm ready to step out of this and step into this. And ala barakatillah, and without any fear, and a strong thiqa in Allah Rabbul Izzah, make your move. So, courage, important. Teach your kids' courage. And I point a difference. Not stupidity, huh? Courage. Courage is not, did he hit you? Go knock him back out. That's not courage. Courage is to be able to do the right thing and overstep all the fears required to do that. Do you understand? So part of the competencies of the next generation should be courage. So look at the courage of Abu Bakr to stand around in difficulty, and the courage of Ali ibn Abi Talib to sleep in the bed of a man assigned to be killed. So Ali radiallahu anhu sleeps. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam watches through the crack of the door, and he sees them. They have gathered around his house. And when the time is right, there's another point here. Notice a very delicate point, that although they've come to assassinate him, they haven't barged into his house. Have you ever noticed? Like, the man's there, what's stopping them? Like, there's some 40 of them. Why don't they kick the door in? You think, read the seerah properly. You see, in their culture, it was aib to enter the house of a man when he is with his family. Because night time. So, although we are here, but la yaliq. You know, the Arabs will say they barged into the house of their fellow tribesmen in the middle of the night. So because of that point of honor, they stayed all the way till morning. So even an animosity, have honor. Have honor. And more important than any other case is when things go sour between husband and wife. قال تعالى وَلَا تَنْسَوُ الْفَضْلَ بَيْنَكُمْ. Even when you're departing, divorcing, breaking apart, don't forget decency with one another. Be cordial. Be decent. Be polite. Sometimes there's kids involved. No need for you to pour the poison of the relationship on that child when he comes to you for a weekend and she poisons him against you. Dear ones, this is a very important lesson. By makeup, by the way Allah made you, you are hardwired to love your mom and dad. That wiring cannot be undone and not leave a psychologically damaging mark on the child. Did I make sense? Like, for a mother to try to cut that wiring and reconnect it somewhere else, don't think the child will grow wholesome if you do that. And for a father to try to plant hatred of a mother in the heart of a child, don't think that that child will grow wholesome if you do that. It is in your interest and in the interest of a generation to come to be honorable even at the point of conflict. So they waited outside, the Rasul sees, and then the Prophet ﷺ opens the door reciting, وَجَعَلْنَا مِن بَيْنِ أَيْدِيهِمْ صَدًّا وَمِنْ خَلْفِهِمْ صَدًّا فَأَغْشَيْنَاهُمْ فَهُمْ لَا يُبُصِرُونَ. And we put a barrier in their front and another in their hind, and blinded, they couldn't see. So they're waiting outside, standing, blades drawn, and Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam walks through them, and they're oblivious to his presence. And one of the aqwal of the Ahl al-Sirah with regards to this, they say there's a man afar, like noticing. Like Abu al-Qasim is walking through them and he's picking up dirt and putting a bit of sand in each person's head. You know, to say, I was here. So he went through like this and made his way to the house of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. Now Medina is that way. Medina is that way. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam and Abu Bakr as-Siddiq migrate that way. Ah, the exact expression I was wanting. You see, because the early generation were intelligent, use the faculties Allah has given you. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry is going to go that way looking. So if you're going to go that way, you're going to get caught. To put them off, go the opposite direction. To confuse. So they went that way. Some 3 miles away, there's a mountain. Climbing up the mountain, this is Ghar al-Thawr. Who has gone to Ghar al-Thawr? MashaAllah, tabarakallah. Habibi, how long did it take you to climb? I'm feeling bad because it took me an hour and a half. Allah bless you. But I tell you, I climbed it. It took me an hour, probably an hour 40 minutes. There's stairs there. And I reached halfway up and my legs had given up. You know, like I looked down, the cars looked small. And I looked up, there was still halfway to go. You know when an adult wants to sit down and cry? Like, what am I supposed to do here, you know? Can't go up, can't go down. So anyway, an hour, 40 minutes, that's with stairs. There was no stairs at the time, it was just rock. So I'm guesstimating maybe a 3 hour climb. You know, raw. And our shoes are different. You wear Nikes and Adidas and all that. Theirs was different. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is not 19. What's the age of the Rasul? Huh? 53. Was 40, he became a prophet 13 years later. And he climbs a mountain, and behind him are people who are about to come out looking for him. Next lesson for the night. Dear ones, health and fitness is important. Because there are a lot of people under the age of 53 that will not be able to climb that mountain. Yet the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam at the age of 53 is able to climb it in the middle of the night without any torch. Make health and workout as part of your regularly weekly routine. A Muslim should be fit and healthy. A Muslim should be strong. Because you live a better... Here, I met an elderly man. Allah give them Jannah, Ya Rab. I saw him very careful with what he eats. Very careful with what he eats. So I said, uncle, why so careful? He said, I calculate that if I eat the wrong things and become sick, I will be deprived of ibadah for a few days, and I don't have the luxury of time. And neither do you. So at the very least, to be fit and healthy so you could worship Allah properly, so that you could perform the wajibat of deen properly, so that you could earn a halal income for your family properly, so that you could stand up for right properly. You know, a person who's physically strong, physically confident, will be able to speak his mind. You know, no, I don't agree with that. And a person who's physically unconfident will look around and go, listen, just bite your tongue, sweetheart. This could get pretty messy pretty quick. So, physical health and fitness, and this is not just for the brothers. Like from the seerah, our mother Khadija radiallahu anha, by consensus is older than the Rasul. Yet the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam used to go to Ghar Hira, and she used to go with him at times. And Ghar Hira is just as bad a climb as Ghar Thawr. Yes, she's physically fit enough. Although age-wise, with the difference of the Ahlul Ilm, some call her 28 when she was 25 and others 40 when he was 25. So irrespective of whether 3 years older or 15 years older, she's still able to climb a mountain. So, and our sisters need to have the same focus on health and fitness as everyone else. And Allah Rabbul Izzah bless one and all with goodness, ya Allah. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Abu Bakr climb up. Somewhere along the climb, the shoes of the Rasul tears and his feet start to bleed. So Abu Bakr as-Siddiq gets under his arm and tries to carry him up or help him up to make it to the top of the mountain. And they reach a cave, the only one up there called Ghar al-Thawr. I struggle in describing what this cave looks like. But I'll try again because I don't really give up. So I try it whenever I explain. So Ghar al-Thawr, the mouth of the cave is here like that. But the inside of the cave is more roomier. You know, like those pizza ovens. Yeah, so there's like the entrance is smaller than the... You know which one I'm talking about, yeah. And inside, in that more roomier area, slightly more roomy area, like as you enter, there's a table made of a rock. Like there's a rock boulder, just solid rock. So at the mouth of the cave, you just see the base of the table, of that rock. And the table flattens out. So you kind of walk in, climb up on the table and sit there. This is this side of the cave. So if someone comes, stands by the door of the cave, they will not be able to see you unless they put their heads down and look up. Are you with me? On the other side of the cave, on the back of the cave, there's another opening. If you look down, you can see. So they're in this cave, and obviously caves are not inhabited. There's not people living there. So naturally bugs will be there. There'll probably be a scorpion and snake on this. So Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu noticed the holes. So he tore a garment and started to plug the holes. Then tidied the place for the Prophet. And you want to see service, learn from Abu Bakr. Like serious, learn from Abu Bakr. Because service by definition means making yourself uncomfortable for the comfort of someone else. And we don't want to do that. Like, that's late, I gotta go, you know, this I gotta do. No, I can't be bothered. Come on, bro, do your own thing. Do you understand me? Because we've become soft and shallow over time. And Abu Bakr could have just said, Ya Allah, Habib, you know, you go, I'll come sit next to you. But nah, he's cleaning. And through him, the ummah learns, you know, the decorum of dealing with the majesty of the Rasul. And then subsequently, those that came to his, you know, to occupy the seat of leadership or the seat of scholarship. So Abu Bakr sits there. Now notice it's desert, it is sand. So their footprints would be there. But they've already thought of that. So Abu Bakr's freed slave Amr ibn Fuhayra normally follows them with his sheep to cover the tracks. Do you see? Well planned, well executed, intelligent creatures. In the morning, Ali ibn Abi Talib walks out with the shawl on his shoulder. They open the door and they know he's gone by them, the Prophet ﷺ. So they rush to the house of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. There, his daughters are at the doorway as well. Asma radiallahu anha is there. And Abu Bakr says, where's your father? She says, I don't know. So he slapped her and they say her hearing tore off. The others rebuked him, like, how do you hit a woman from another tribe or from our tribe, because they're all linked together. So anyway, now the Quraysh decide that whoever catches them, dead or alive, 100 camels per head. And some say 100 camels for both, but irrespective, a reward given. So now every man, and forgive the statement, and his dog is out there looking for this lottery. You know, 100 camels. And people, you hear them sometimes describe camels as the Mercedes of the desert. You heard this one? Forget about Mercedes, Honda of the desert. But still 100 Hondas are a good thing. You know. So everyone's looking for 100, you're set. So they followed where they think they, because they're going to Medina, so everyone's rushing that way. And others hired a tracker. You know trackers? You've seen the old Aboriginal movies where they have the trackers to be able to track you. So trackers would be able to find you, trace you where you've gone. So this one was reputed to be able to follow the scent and the flight of a bird. Like a specialist knows what he's doing. So this one said, go that way. I go, what do you mean? Medina's that way. He goes, nah, they went this way. So he walked until he reached the base of the cave, of the mountain. And at the base of the mountain, he found the footprints. So he said, as with regards to this one, this is the footprint of Ibn Abu Quhafa. I can reference to Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. This is the footprint of that one. And as with regards to this one, this is like your companion in Mecca. In reference to? Nah. This is like the one in Mecca. What's the footprint in Mecca? Maqam Ibrahim. These days it's deteriorated, like it's not what it was, you know, with the touch of man and the rest of it. But the tracker in his profession gives this, that this is, it resembles the one you have in Mecca. And this confirms the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that I am the closest in resemblance to my father Ibrahim. So they climb up. How long? Trust me, 3 hours a safe bet. I mean, these Australian trained people, you know, they were the desert, a different situation. Allah bless you all. 3 hours in just rock-wise, understandable. So they climb and they reach the cave. And they reach the cave. And Abu Bakr as-Siddiq can see their feet from where he's sitting on that table. So khalas. And all they have to do is what? And coincidentally, some of the scholars of Sirah say, one of them had to answer the call of nature. Go to the bathroom. So he walked to the back, away from the rest. And now he's there. If he looks down, he'll see them. You see, between a rock and a hard stuff. And what do you think the response of the Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu, who's obviously nervous? Nervous for what? The safety of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And somewhere in that is the notion that if something happens to him, I will be the person in whose care the final Prophet of Allah was hurt. So Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, perturbed, so the Rasul says, لا تحزن إن الله معنا. Abu Bakr, don't be worried, Allah is with us. If you leave everything else in the life of the Prophet aside, and you just take this moment, it is sufficient a proof of prophethood. He hasn't said, let's look for a back way. Listen, Abu Bakr, get this rock, put it here. لا تحزن إن الله معنا. And he reclining himself. Don't worry, Abu Bakr. Allah is with us. ثاني اثنين إذ هما في الغار إذ يقول لصاحبه لا تحزن إن الله معنا. The Quran recorded it so that me and you could recite it till Qiyamah come. Second of the two when he told his companion. And by the verse of the Quran, by the verse of the Quran, Abu Bakr is a Sahabi. Like the Sahabi by definition, but by the dictate of the Quran, the only person which whom a Sahabi has been called is Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. إِذْ يَقُولُ لِصَاحِبِهِ, when he told his companion. And where was it, like the latter generations that have come these days, you know, and grow the audacity to wag their tongues about Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. Like, where were you when Abu Bakr was being mentioned by Allah Rabbul Izzah? أَيْنَ النُّورُ السُّهَى مِنْ شَمْسِ الضُّحَى. Like, what's the comparison, you know? How do you compare to the Siddiq of the Ummah? So, next point is having a heart that is comfortable in its reliance on Allah Rabbul Izzah. Dear ones, don't stress on any point in life. You're in good hands. You know, I heard one of the sheikhs, someone sent me a clip, I found it beautiful. Allah reward one and all, Ya Rab. You know when you get your little child, and you throw them up. Like when you throw them up, they, you know, depending how high you throw, do you see that little worry? And again, brothers, don't practice that. Khalas, it's just done. You throw up a child, panic takes him, then he lands, he's in safe hands. You never intended any harm. In the same way, recognize وَلِلَّهِ الْمَثَلُ الْأَعْلَى. There's no this, but difficulties come in life. Be the type that is fully reliant that Allah's got me. You understand? Whatever happens, I have an Allah. What is there to worry about? Like, what is there to worry about? And everything that you fear is self-created. And Allah Rabbul Izzah takes care of everything, and the maqadir are written. Live through life, dear ones. Make sure your bodies work and exert themselves, but make sure your hearts are filled with peace and solace and tawakkul on Allah Rabbul Izzah. Whatever the situation, it's okay. You understand? So now they sit in this cave. How many days? What time is your... How long do I have, rather? All right. Barakallahu feek. So, the next lesson here, we just mentioned about reliance on Allah Rabbul Izzah. Rely on Allah Rabbul Izzah. So they stayed in this cave for some 3 days. And once the search subsided, once they said, nah, we've missed them, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam came down. Abdullah ibn Uraiqat brought the camels, and they started to make their way from the side of the coast and go towards Medina al-Munawwara. This event is called the Hijrah. I'll make one important point here. Our calendar, mine and your calendar, is a Hijri calendar in reference to this event, the Hijrah. So in the time of Umar ibn al-Khattab, radiallahu anhu warda, the nation became big enough and other calendars were there. The Gregorian calendar was there, the Persian calendar was there, Jewish calendar was there, and they could have easily adopted one. But the wisdom of Umar ibn al-Khattab, and look at the wisdom, in something that would not even occur to you, to listen, we will have our own calendar. We will have our own calendar. And it will. Every other calendar starts at the birth or death of someone. We will not even copy anyone in that. We will start at the hijrah of the Prophet ﷺ. To teach what? To me and you. Because there's a lesson. Understand, dear ones. They understood that Islam came to be followed. It did not come to follow. Learn that one. Islam came to be followed. It didn't come to follow. I want to say that again. Islam came to be followed. It didn't come to follow. So whatever the requirements of deen, follow it. And don't be those that are, affected by your surroundings. So the rest of society doesn't pray. How can I pray? No one prays at work. Ah, Habibi, you pray. You be solid. Like gold. Put gold in water, gold. Put gold in acid, gold. Put gold in heat, gold. Put gold in cold, gold. Gold doesn't change to its surroundings. Don't change. Don't be people that are firm in your values and in your practices. Adopt what is good so far as normal life is concerned. A new technology comes, a new technique comes, a new... Khalas, we have no issue with that. But so far as our deen is concerned, our prayers are concerned, the wajibat are concerned, this is the requirement of deen. I'm doing it, nice, loud and confident. I would say proud, but proud doesn't go well with our system, Because anyway. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam started to make his journey towards Mecca, towards Medina al-Munawwara. Now, certain nice things happen on the way, historical things. I will mention a couple with you, inshallah ta'ala. So news goes like wildfire across the peninsula, that the Quraysh, the custodians of the house, are looking for a man and his friend, and they have given the reward of 200 camels. So everyone's on the lookout, and there's a tribe which has a significant member or a leader in it called Suraqa ibn Malik. Suraqa is a person whom sometimes shaitan used to come in his guise. This doesn't make, he's a sahabi, but shaitan used to come in his image in certain meetings. And there's another sahabi who Jibreel used to come in his image. And both sahabi and both a lot better than me and you. So Suraqa at this stage is not a Muslim. And his tribe is somewhere between Mecca and Medina. So one of the tribesmen came and he said, I saw a couple of people, making their way towards the direction of Medina. It might be the ones the Quraysh are looking for. He's not really convinced, just as in news. But Suraqa is Suraqa, So he said quickly, probably some of our tribesmen, they're just down that way. And then quickly excused himself from the meeting, told his servant, prepare my ride and get my weapon. So prepared the ride, jumped on it, took his weapon, rushed to the direction where the man had said he had seen them. And now he can see them, you know, desert afar. And Abu Bakr radiallahu anh, in this journey, he used to walk in front of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And then sometimes he used to run and go to behind the Prophet ﷺ. Then he used to go to his right. Then he used to go to his left. So the Rasul says, "Ya Abu Bakr, what are you doing?" He said, "O Prophet of Allah, I stand in front and then my head says, what if there comes an attack from behind? So I rush to the back. And then I think, what if there's an attack on the right? So I come to the right. Just a man on high alert." So he notices the rider, and the rider sees them like can see. Then Suraq ibn Malik says himself in his narration of the situation, he says, "Rushing towards them, my horse's feet dug into the ground and I fell off." From the other side, from Abu Bakr as-Siddiq and the Prophet ﷺ side, they've seen a man coming, and a walk of niceness is different from an adversarial run. So Abu Bakr said, "Ya Rasul, look." So the Prophet ﷺ made dua, "Ya Rab, suffice me his evil however you choose." So the horse's feet dug into the ground and Suraqa fell. So Suraqa got up, picked himself up, dusted himself off, pulled the horse out, got on the horse, rode again. The Prophet ﷺ saw, Abu Bakr saw, so he said, "Ya Rasul, look." So the Prophet made dua, "Ya Rab, suffice me his evil, however you choose." The horse's feet, legs dug in again, a bit more deep according to some. He fell again, got up, dusted himself off, jumped on again, rushed a third time. And this time the Prophet ﷺ sees him again, makes the dua. Suraqa falls, horse goes really deep this time, falls. And at that stage, I'm joining between a couple of narrations in this. A whirlwind, little ice, you know, localized wind that comes sometimes happened between him and the Prophet ﷺ. He said, "I realize that the man is out of bounds, like you can't touch him." In other narrations, he says, "I divined, like, you know, that they had ways of, should I go right, should I go left, you know, which way, call it dice or arrows or bones or whatever." So he goes, even that suggested, don't go, you know. So, and then he goes, "I also realized, you know, this is the Rasul of Allah. You see a person that's, anyway, so the presence of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So now the man that has come to take them captive or kill them now comes to him. He goes, "Ya Muhammad, write me a guarantee of safety. Give me safe passage so that when your amr takes over, that I will be given safety." So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam turns to the person next to him. This is either Amr ibn Fuhayra or Abdullah ibn Urayqit. He goes, "Write him a guarantee that Suraq ibn Malik has safety from Allah and his Prophet. Like Allah and his Prophet has given him safety." So Suraqa took this. And this part is, I give this version, although I know that I'm aware of the other side. So Suraqa was anticipating 200 camels. So now he's really disappointed, you know, "I lost 200 camels, fell down 3 times, you know. And now I went to the person who I was seeking to capture to give me protection." You know, it really turned upside down for him. So he looked a bit sad, you know. So he said, you know, "There was 200 camels, I lost 200 camels on this. You know, give some financial guarantee as well." So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "A'iduka sawari al-kisra." Kisra. "I promise you the bracelets of Kisra, the emperor of Persia." Or in one qawl, what will you be like? What will be the day, or what will be your affair like when you wear the bracelets, the, you know, the jewelry of the emperor of Persia? So he goes, Kisra mean? Which one? The emperor? He goes, yes, he goes, write it. So, the Rasul of Allah has promised Suraqah ibn Malik the bracelets of Kisra. So after Hunayn, after the battle of Hunayn, the tribes that belonged to Suraqah fell to Islam. And Suraqah came with his parchment that I've been given safety by you, by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And he's also promised me this. So he gave it to... So at the time of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, the parchment came to him that the Prophet of Allah has given safety to this and has promised him the bracelets of Khisra. So Abu Bakr as-Siddiq at his demise gave it to Umar ibn al-Khattab. That this is a promissory note from the Prophet. They had no doubt it's going to happen, so you better be aware. At the time of Umar ibn al-Khattab, Persia was conquered. And they brought some of its treasures back to Medina. And Umar is going through that and he goes, what's this? They said the bracelets of Kisra. So he said, go call Suraqah. So Suraqah came old man now. They brought him. So Umar threw it to him. He goes, here, and bear witness that the Prophet spoke the truth. So Suraqah picked it up crying, Sadaqa Rasulullah, Sadaqa Rasulullah. That the word of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is indeed true. And this is one of the miracles that happened on this blessed journey. And another of the miracles is the Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam passed by the tent of Umm Ma'bad. You know the story of Umm Ma'bad. So, in the middle of nowhere is this tent. And a lone, regal woman. You know, the type that movies cannot create. You know why I say that? Because, you know, people struggle living in a house with locks and doors and a lot of other people around you and you're afraid. Her in the middle of nowhere, standing by the door of her tent without a care in the world. It takes heart. And now these travelers come and she sees them. And the Prophet ﷺ, Abu Bakr as-Siddiq and the guide, and obviously hot, and they want some food because travelers need food and nourishment. So they go, is there anything for us to eat? And she says, wallahi, if I had anything, I wouldn't have held it back from you. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam notices a very frail goat tethered on the side of the tent. So he said, what about that one? Can I milk it? So she said, that is so weak it couldn't even walk to graze. It's got nothing, but try whatever you get is yours. So of the miracles of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, is he asked for a pot, and then he sallallahu alaihi wasallam put his hands to the udders and made dua or said bismillah, and the udder started to swell full of milk. And he sallallahu alayhi wasallam milked and milked till the pot became full. And then gave to Umm Ma'bad first. And gave to his companions, then drank. And then filled the pot again. And filled, left it for her. And then went on his journey towards Medina al-Munawwara. Her description of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is one of the most timeless and phenomenal descriptions of anyone that has laid eyes on the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And again, I talk about the quality of the person, like able to capture a moment in words, able to hold herself in the presence of three foreign men, and able to, you know, live in a way that history is able to record until today a person by the name of Umm Ma'bad just because of the contribution she made. I think I will stop here, inshallah ta'ala. Dear ones, may Allah bless you, Allah guide you, Allah guard you, Allah honor you, Allah elevate you. It has been an absolute honor and a privilege to be amidst you. May Allah Rabbul Izzah unite us in this life in His obedience, and if not in this life, then in Firdaus al-A'la. For your time and patience, I thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This program was presented by Al-Bayan Radio, the voice of Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah.